Nation with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to a special Children in Need minisode of Doctor Who. Woohoo! And not just any minisode, that's just what we call them. This is a prequel to the Christmas special. Now, if you remember, when last seen, the Doctor had said goodbye to his best friend Rory and to Amelia Pond, the woman who will never be replaced in his hearts.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, don't worry, she won't be watching.
Of course not.
She's in LA.
Exactly. Roll the minisode.
Do we really call them that?
Yeah, minisodes, that's what they're called. That's a cool name. Roll the minisode.
In London in the time of Queen Victoria, there were many tales of a remarkable personage known as the Great Detective. I refer, of course, to Madame Vastra, the lizard woman of Paternoster Row, and her extraordinary adventures. Her beautiful assistant, Jenny Flint. And their mysterious henchman, Strax, whose countenance was too abominable to be photographed. There are also accounts of a fourth member of the Paternoster gang, a shadowy figure whose assistance was only sought in the direst emergencies.
I'm so glad you came. We have news, I think, of particular interest to you. There was a meteor shower in the southwest. Unexpected timing and density. I have calculated there is a 34% chance it is the result of alien intervention. 24%. Well, they could just be meteors, but it's worth looking into. There is a very pleasant tea room in the area.
Also, there's a Professor Erasmus Pin who's claiming he's going to split the world open with a giant drill through the thinnest part of the Earth's crust. I think we should investigate. I mean, doesn't actually have a giant drill, and he's not really a professor. And he was a bit drunk at the time and singing a bit, but, you know, it's never too early to investigate a drill.
I've declared war on the moon.
To be quiet, Strax.
Too long the moon has hung, unmonitored and unsuspected in the sky. It has gained an enormous tactical advantage.
There's no one living there.
Then it is clearly time to act. They won't suspect a thing.
Who won't suspect a thing?
Moonites.
Why do you keep doing this? What is the point? I have told you. I keep telling you. I don't do this anymore. I've retired.
There's a man on Pride Street with an invisible wife. Maybe he just doesn't have a wife.
You're wasting your time.
Merry Christmas! I think he means it.
Yes, my dear. I rather think he does.
Damn moon.
There you go! The Doctor has retired. This Christmas, the Earth will face terrible, terrible danger. But, as all humanity hangs in the balance, will anyone be able to persuade the Doctor to save the day?
Yes.
Right, well, so much for dramatic tension. Blimey, Jenna. Right, see you later for the very first showing of the Christmas trailer.
See you later.
Hello and welcome to the What the Blimmin' Hell's Going On podcast. Oh no, sorry. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast number 139. And, we're back. And with me this week, oh God, what are they going to say this time? It's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I'm here to work.
It's Mary Lang.
I'll have a salute.
Okay.
And it's Reese Parton.
Sontar ha! Sontar ha! Hello.
Sontar ha! Sontar ha!
Sontar ha!
All together now!
Sontar ha!
Sontar ha!
Anyway, right, yes. Right, stuff been going on. By the way, I will let you know that, of course, I made a bit of a mistake last week when everybody sort of said, oh, I can't record at that time. I forgot. I'm perfectly capable of doing a podcast on my own. Curses.
No.
Damn.
Here we were today, therefore, like a group of little wet-nosed puppies waiting for you to call.
Oh, so nice. However, darn, I should have kept the weekly show going. We've fallen right out of the charts. Only because we didn't release a show. But anyway, here is the chart. So, by the way, only 20, well, there's 23, but I'm rounding it down to 20 podcasts. No ups and downs.
It's almost as if there's no new episodes and things have gotten back to normal.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Number 20, Tim's Take On. Number 19, Staggering Stories. Number 18, Two Minute Time Lord. That doesn't work, does it? 2 Minute Time Lord. Number 17, The Big Finish Podcast. Number 16, Podcast Who. The Doctor Who Podcast, geeksradio.com. Isn't that a long title? Anyway, number 15, The Preacher's Podcast. Number 14, The Whoniverse, a Doctor Who Podcast. Sorry, it makes me laugh for some reason. 13, Doctor Who After Buzz TV Show. Number 12, Mark Who 42's Doctor Who Hooniverse. That's a bit of a mouthful.
Yes.
Number 11, The Crinoid Podcast. Number 10, Mostly Harmless Cutaway. However, if we'd reached a reunion, can't speak all of a sudden, if we'd released a show this week, it would have been us at number 10 and Mostly Harmless Cutaway at number 11. But anyway, we didn't release a show, therefore, number 9, The Memory Cheats.
We count ourselves there anyway.
No, we can't. Number 8, Impossible Podcasts. Number 7, The TARDIS Tavern. Number 6, The Ood Cast. Number 5, The Flashing Blade. Number 4, DWO WhoCast. Number 3, Radio Free Scaro. Number 2, Doctor Who Podshock. And at number 1, God knows why, it's the Doctor Who Podcast. I can see you're all underwhelmed by that rundown of the charts. Yes. By the way, Robert's back, as a lot of you may have got lots of notifications coming through over the last 12 hours or so. Mm-hmm. Is usually when you go to your phone and you see Facebook with the 20 next to it, it means that Robert's back. obviously going through all his sort of last week's load of Facebook messages he wants to like, and it's so wonderful to actually see that red thing and see the 20 and think, ah, Robert!
Oh,
so, but he's not back on the show this week, because obviously, give him a chance, listener, give him a chance. He's only just come out of hospital. But next week, hopefully, he'll be back with us saying, Adam.
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 Actually, what am I saying? Hopefully, he'll be back on the show next week, but not going, Adam.
Adam. Oh, he will.
He will.
If you didn't do that, we'd miss his old style contributions.
Oh, speak for yourself.
And for all of your for all of your criticisms of these shows that have such long titles, I think they should learn from us. We're only the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Yes, but only if you say it, spell it out, it's a long name. If you say it in numerals, it's a lot shorter.
And we're getting to the point where most of those podcasts I don't listen to and have never tried listening to.
Right.
You know, I don't really have much time for listening to podcasts. At the moment, I'm currently listening to the Miranda Romanigu. See, I'm out of practice.
I've never heard of
her. Miranda Hart audiobook. And the only Doctor Who podcast I've been listening to is Bigger on the Inside. I'm catching up with that one, because I'm a bit behind on it. And some other show that Kirby's now on and moving over to.
No, I was on that one.
Something or other. You know what? I was listening to that show, and I thought I was listening to a recording I downloaded because I'd updated my iPhone. I drove from Cowes to Newport where there's no 3G, and it just stopped. And when I tried to get it back again, I didn't get it back again, but I listened to a bit of it. Does that count?
I guess.
Oh dear. Well, I did, honestly. I did listen to a bit of it. Anyway, Colin Baker is on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here at the moment in the Australia, I think it's called, somewhere quite out in the
where's that
in the Gold Coast area.
oddly there was a news story on the United States National Public Radio about that particular show, not about Colin, but about
that's disgraceful.
There was a news story that they've run out of there's a cockroach shortage.
Celebrities?
Yeah, no.
Oh, they will be pleased.
There's a cockroach shortage in Australia. So they're trying to come up with other things to drop on the celebrity.
Well, unfortunately, Helen Flanagan, a wimpy young actress from Coronation Street, has been refusing to do, being voted for, I should say, by the British public, and refusing to do these tasks that the Aussies have been setting up and spending quite a lot of time building and throwing insects and creepy crawlies and fish guts and whatever.
I take no responsibility for the action of others.
All the planning, well, it's a bit of ITV production, isn't it? All the planning that goes into it, and she just turns up and says, not doing it, and walks off again. Obviously, it means her fellow celebrities, including Colin Baker, get no food. And Colin Baker being quite a large gentleman, in a way, it's quite good, because he did say when he went in there that he was there to lose some weight. And
there are easier ways.
He has lost a bit of weight.
Could someone who knows more about this show explain to an American here who's never seen it? What are you talking about?
Been on in America? The beautiful Mylene Klass presented or co-presented the American version of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. It's exactly the same, only with British people.
I never heard of it until a couple of weeks ago when I heard that Colin was going to be on it.
Well, me neither.
That's why I was surprised when I heard about it on NPR last week.
It's been on for about 10 years. But anyway,
is it on currently in the U.S.?
No. I don't think so. It was on for a couple of years in the States before they gave up on it.
What did they make these people do?
I don't know if you remember. A few years ago, there was a program on Great British Television. I say Great British Television because, of course, it's great. Hosted by an Australian gentleman, Clive, I can't remember. He's some journalist with a bald head. Anyway, and they used to have this thing of funny clips from around the world. And the funny clips from around the world that they used to save to the end were from a Japanese television program called, I think it was, what was it now? I knew the title until I tried to say it. Endurance, I think it was, something like that. And they used to take the mic out of it, what an absurd thing to have as a game show. And lo and behold, here we are in 2012 doing exactly the same, if not worse, to celebrities than the Japanese did to people then. It's the in thing now, but they used to take the mickey out of it about 12 years ago to 13 years ago. But it's the common thing to make celebrities, contestants suffer during reality TV shows. Do you want to know the gist of it?
Yes.
Right. 10 celebrities initially get sent out to the Australian bush and dress up in Australian garb, minus corks, and get sort of put on a sort of mission to find the camp, and then they're in the camp, and then the public then vote for one of the celebrities to do a bush tucker trial. The bush tucker trial consists of nasty things, basically. Yeah. They've either got to do a physical thing, but somewhere along the line within the trial, whatever it may be, whether it be parachuting, jumping out of a helicopter, or swimming underneath, whatever, there's got to be scary creatures involved in this. It might be cockroaches, it might be rats, depending on what you're scared of course, crocodiles with their mouths taped up, things like that. And they've got a sort of, spiders is the main thing. They've got to dodge these things and still achieve these, what they call sort of plastic stars. And every time they achieve getting one of these plastic stars within a task, within a time limit, of course, that star means a meal for the camp. And bearing in mind there's 10 people in the camp, they have the opportunity at this stage of winning 10 stars. Helen Flanagan has won absolutely no stars and has been involved in every single task, bush tucker trial, I should say, since the series began on Sunday, which is a week ago. So, starving celebrities. And somebody on Facebook, when I said, what's the point, said, well, it's fun to see them starve.
It was only on in the U.S. for two series, 2003 and 2009. It's only an active series in two countries right now, the U.K. and Germany.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Kirby, you might find some information on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on Wikipedia.
Yes, that is where I am.
Yes, I thought you might be somewhere.
Ich bin ein Star. Halt ich hier raus.
Pardon?
It was my horrible German pronunciation of the name of the show in German.
Oh, thank you for that. But anyway, back to Colin Baker. Yes, he's coming across as a very nice chap, but I already knew that because I've already met him. And it's a great bloke.
Ooh, name dropping.
Bit fat, but great. Oh, yeah, I met him. Have you seen the pictures of me and Alistair Pearson in Bessie, where Alistair got the chance to wear the coat and I didn't? Never mind.
So do you watch this show every week, Adam?
Oh yeah, it's good. It is entertaining. Okay. I'm getting a bit irritated. I like to see the tasks, so I'm a bit irritated by this Helen Flanagan, who's got very nice breasts, but that's just about it. I'm a bit irritated by the fact that she is preventing me from watching what I enjoy. It's the tasks, and it's the British public that are voting her to do it, and they just, for some reason, I will say, I haven't voted once. Maybe I should start voting. I don't know, but it does cost 37p or something like that per call, but. Never mind.
The listing on the Wikipedia page on series 12 of the UK version, where it's got the list of everyone, it's got Colin Baker listed as Doctor Who actor.
Correct. As it is listed every time his name flashes up on the screen, it says actor, former Doctor Who. But I will say, there was a task in which the team, as in the people in the camp, were asked a question, and the prize would have been, I can't remember what the prize was, it's irrelevant. But anyway, he was asked a question, or the camp was asked, well, he can't speak all of a sudden. I'll have a drink.
Rocky.
Well, splash back in at me glasses, I can't see now. Anyway, they was asked the question, how many episodes of Doctor Who did Colin Baker appear in? And there he is, and he's sat there, and everybody's trying to, come on, Colin, and he's trying to reel off. And that was a bit the thrill for me. They actually kept that in, him reeling off all the stories he was in.
Oh, wow, cool.
And he was trying to count up the episodes, and they left that in on ITV. I remember mentioning Vengeance on Varos and Time Lash and all the other things. So that was really, really good. I quite enjoyed that. But I think it was 34. I didn't actually count right. I counted 29, so I don't
you
know.
Didn't record it?
I mean, I didn't record it. I did initially, then I watched it in the morning and deleted it. Well, did you want me to listen to it?
Yeah, to get to double check it.
Right, time for the latest Dingo Dollar Challenge now, and this one saw Charlie and Ashley using their sense of direction.
What? With women? And a sense of direction. this I gotta see. But it takes them only 5 minutes to get lost. Have you ever met a woman who knows her right from her left? I haven't. They haven't got a clue what they're doing most of the time. Women and directions. This is gonna be good. I'm gonna get a cup of tea to watch this one.
Here's Charlie and Ashley trying to find their way around the jungle.
Hello, campmates.
Oh.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, we've got a question for you.
Colin Baker played
in how many episodes of Doctor Who?
Jeez.
I'm supposed to know that?
Colin, oh, sure. Wait,
roughly.
Yeah.
He's just thinking right now.
If they don't even get the first one right, we're doomed.
Please think hard, Cole.
The challenge was we had to get on our radio, talk to camp, ask them questions. He'll know it. I feel confident.
I feel positive.
I do too.
Let's put a positive edgy out there into the world. Did you do it?
Yeah.
I did it too.
Felt solid.
Twin Dilemma, Vengeance on Varos, Two Doctors, Mark of the Rani.
Can you explain to us exactly what you're doing, like with the numbers, because we haven't got a clue.
Each the number relates to numbers on a padlock, and we have to enter them to
open a box which gives instructions for you to go to your next place.
Okay.
Alrighty.
There were seven stories.
It's going to be four noughts anyway. And while they're all shouting out all these numbers, I'm just going up one click at a time. And they're still shouting all these numbers. I went, click. Thank you very much. That'll do you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the right answer. Thank
32.
You very much.
32. Ian Kirk, who has indeed provided us with some audio this week. However, I actually haven't got my piece of kit for playing it. Or have I?
See, these episodes that we just watched, they are full of things that I could see him having fun with.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, I haven't played it. Well, obviously, I'll try and dig out my kit so as we can play Ian's audio. Anyway, I'm going to go and find my speakers. I'll be back momentarily. Oh, I'll get myself a drink as well, I'm at it. In the meantime, here is, as promised earlier on in the show by Matt Smith, Here is the preview thingamajig for the Christmas special, which is called, wait for it, if you don't want to listen to the title, you can skip forward by 15 seconds using a new style iPod or iPhone, The Snowmen.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the very first look at the Doctor Who Christmas trailer, which is, of course, the very first episode to feature Miss Jenna Louise Coleman.
Second.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you were in the Dalek one, weren't you?
Yep.
Playing a different character.
Yep, totally different character.
Well, you died.
Yep,
I got turned into a Dalek.
Ouch.
Yeah. So you couldn't be the same character at Christmas. That would be just impossible.
No way.
Bravo trailer.
There's a man called the Doctor. He lives on a cloud in the sky, and all he does, all day, every day, is to stop all the children in the world ever having bad dreams.
Am I going to have the nightmare tonight?
When you find something brand new in the world, something you've never seen before, what's the next thing you look for?
Doctor!
A grenade!
The Doctor doesn't help people.
What's your name?
Clara.
What is this?
I said I'd feed you. I didn't say who to.
Listen to me, the snow's feeding off your thoughts.
It will build an army of ice. It will be the last day of humanity on this planet.
Oh, interesting.
It's surprising.
Oh, no.
Oh, not another accident?
Apparently.
Oh, God.
Don't break anything.
Oh. Very careful here. Stop knocking my wires.
I'm not, not knocking wires. Sorry.
So, Kirby, tell me, what is it you used to do in these conventions?
I worked everything that I could, from running masquerades to registration for WindyCon for years and years and years.
WindyCon, is that Chicago?
Yeah, that was Chicago.
Ah.
I'm sure there are people, there's going to be people at Chicago TARDIS that I probably worked with when I worked at WindyCon. WindyCon's still going on. We simply moved south.
Okay. Okay. When does the final list of what all the offerings are comes out? Do you just get that when you arrive? Because they have not had anything like that online.
That's odd. They should have something like that online.
Mm-hmm.
No. I also ran programming helped run programming for a couple of years. And sometimes we wouldn't have everything put together until the Friday it started.
Yeah, that's what I thought might be happening with this.
Right.
What?
Right. What, are you back?
I'm back, but the trouble is...
front and side, too.
I don't know if you're
going to
be quiet. I don't know if you're going to be... It hurts. I don't know if you're going to hear this.
Where is the proper...
I've got my other one set of speakers, but not the other one. Let's see if I can find it without stubbing my toe. But Alicia's nicked it. How is that gone? Well, I'm going to play it and hope that you can hear it. And if you can't, well, obviously you'll hear it when the show goes out. But I'll see if I can pay attention and comment on it.
I often can't understand it until the show comes out anyway.
Right, okay. Me too. Right. It doesn't come through very clearly.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. I hope Robert is well enough to be back with us this week. The Sontaran Stratagem and the Poison Sky by Helen Rayner. Luke Rattigan is not much taller than the Sontaran. Perhaps that's why they like him. That, and he's barking mad. Wolf is in this, Martha is back again, and we get a glimpse of Rose. The companions were never really gone in the RTD era. It reminds me of a satirical country song. How can I miss you when you just won't leave? The unit soldier says the Sontaran looks like a potato. You say potato, I say potato. Master, Dalek, let's call the whole thing off. By coincidence, there's also some Taran in the Children in Need minisode. Matt and Jenna Louise also joked about whether she could be playing the same character as in Asylum of the Daleks.
Don't give the game away.
Would you like to swing on a star? Kelly Moon memes, Home in a Jar. And would you rather be a Dalek? Adam has been to the Beatles Museum.
Yes.
And Liverpool Docks.
Indeed.
Do not underestimate the power of the dock side.
God.
Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. At least somebody sent in some audio for us. But anyway, yes, that's great.
Because we disappeared from the internet for two weeks.
I did say I'd be back, for goodness sake. But we can trust in Ian. Did you hear that, by the way, Kirby?
Most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were parts of it that are inaudible.
Well, you were just laughing. Was that fake laughing then? You
doing? No, laughed at the parts I could hear.
Excellent.
Is his voice that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, so also, it's interesting because I had planned to say, and we have got no feedback this week, and then there it is. So thank you, Ian. Right, do you want to review Sontaran's stratagem and the poison sky? Don't have to.
I suppose.
No, go on. We'll do it. Now, I did actually get round to watching this episode last week, but I was sort of writing at the same time, as I've alluded to before. I've now got to write a Beatles quiz book, of which I'm about a third of the way through, and I keep on having to design the cover for my book, which I asked you lot listeners to design, and other people as well. So now I'm trying to design it, and it keeps getting bounced back by the publishers. So I'm trying. Anyway, so it starts.
Why don't they like it? What's wrong with it?
I'm not a designer, for goodness sake. Anyway, it starts off on the steps of some mansion-y type place with some reasonably attractive woman.
It's the Abbey from the Eye of the Gorgon.
Okay.
From Sarah Jane.
Okay.
And
yes, it's a journalist, isn't it?
Actually, it's Margam Country Park. It's a house which looks like it's really old, but it's not that old.
Oh, okay, thank you. But anyway, Margam
Castle is supposed to look like it's from the 11th century, but it was built in the 19th century.
Okay. But anyway, she's Joe Nakashima, I think. She doesn't want her sat-nav to help her because it's an Atmos sat-nav and she's got something against Atmos for some reason. Don't know why. Anyway, so...
They charge too much for their energy. You see, that's the... as I've said before, Atmos is a company here in the southeast U.S., which is an energy company.
Right, we'll see. Okay, that makes sense. She's driving a Volkswagen, which they sort of half covered up the logo. And she wants to go to Unit HQ, but the sat-nav is having nothing of it and decides to take over the car.
This is your final destination.
Do you reckon that... who wrote this story, by the way?
Alan Rayner.
The same person who did the Daleks in Manhattan. And this is so much
Alan
better.
Rayner.
Yeah, all right, you said that.
It is so much better.
I'm just saying that she obviously doesn't like sat-navs very much. meanwhile, the Doctor and Donna are on the TARDIS and hitting the console with what looks like a spanner or something. And then the very cheesy moment when Martha says, "I'm bringing you back to Earth." Well, I thought it was cheesy.
Oh, isn't that the scene, though, when the doctor says something about you don't want to bounce off the 80s? Well,
and you don't want to leave a dent in it.
Yeah. And the doctor says somebody did.
Yeah, who is he referring to? Oh, he's probably referring to one of those old fine BBC stalwarts that took the show off the air in 1989. And I don't mean Sir Jimmy. Sorry, Jimmy Savile, as my mother calls him. Michael Grade. See, I got his name wrong. I don't really care. But anyway, so they land, and the Doctor and Martha have an emotional reunion. Mind you, it was only about 7 episodes since she last was in it, but never mind.
By the way, in the commentary, which was kind of an uninteresting commentary, at least for the first episode, I don't know. I didn't listen to the commentary for the second episode.
The second one was even more tedious.
Were they the same three people?
I don't know. I wasn't listening to it.
You mean the people that they interviewed?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they were once again going over and over the Sun Torrents.
Two of the people that they interviewed were Dan Starkey, and who played one of the who's our always Sun Torrent nowadays.
Yeah, is he the one in the
He's
the
one in the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also the guy who did the prosthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of them, when they went in one of the producers was also, it was Billy Gardner, was doing most of the talking in the commentary.
Yeah.
The problem is that Dan Starkey and the other guy had not seen either of the episodes while they were doing the commentary. This is no way of doing a commentary.
No, it isn't.
Oh, right.
Because
they kept going
quiet.
Yeah.
Since they were getting involved in the story, which I guess
is that a bit like what Reese does when he's on the 20 megabyte. They can't speak. What's the name of this show? Magic. Oh, he's gone. The 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Hello, Reese.
Oh, and I'm sorry, Kirby. You said commentary.
Oh, we are still there.
Talking confidential.
Oh, no, no. Okay. I didn't even pull out the confidential disc.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I should have.
Meanwhile.
No, they're boring.
Meanwhile, the Doctor arrives at Unit HQ and gets saluted at, and doesn't appreciate being saluted at.
unlike Donna.
Yes,
Donna says, "By the way,
thank you."
did you notice anything about that trailer, the unit trailer?
No, the
headquarters.
Oh, I didn't. That's what you're here for.
The headquarters.
Bigger on the inside.
Yes, it's really bigger on the inside. They only had a standard 18-wheeler. I guess actually looking at fewer than 18 wheels, but the size of your standard lorry. But the set was bigger, so they put a computerized extension on a CGI extension when you look at it from the outside, so that so it would look the same.
So what you're saying is that the BBC people were being a bit pedantic about the size of the set.
Yes.
So they went to all the trouble of CGIing a larger. But the trouble is, what they don't take into account, that when you've got a camera in something, it does sort of change the way or the size of the area. I remember going to watch Deal or No Deal being filmed, and on the telly it looks actually looks much the same as it does when you're there. Actually, forget that. Carry on. Meanwhile, yes. Anyway, two soldiers arrive as his unit. Soldiers arrive in some sort of strange, sinister place with some kit in it, and this is where we get. Yeah, there's a rather sort of a music scene when the Sontaran sort of turns up. First of all, there's some strange sort of what you would call it. It's a bit like a flesh creature, isn't it? Like in Flesh. Very similar looking. Effective, though. I remember I thought it was quite a
bit more gooey.
Yeah. And the mouth is really good.
Dan Starkey was saying in the commentary that while he was being made up, the guy who was in that suit was waiting to be called onto the set and was just kind of reclining on a couch in the makeup room. And he couldn't talk.
Yeah.
And Starkey didn't know much about the story, and he's going, "What the heck is going on over there?"
Meanwhile, it's Christopher Ryan is the Sontaran that appears in this particular scene. And, of course, I was quite pleased when the soldier who was saying all the smallest jokes to him and being a bit of a bully, to be fair.
Short answer.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think he thought he was being funny, but the funny thing was when he actually got shot in the leg. So... comeuppance, in my view, with that one. I've got no sympathy for him. He shouldn't have been so.
Bite your kneecaps off.
Yeah.
Right.
Meanwhile, he takes his helmet off in sort of typical Doctor Who fashion.
Well, wasn't that great though for us old time fans?
What, the fact that he took his helmet off?
To see a Sontaran again.
Oh, yeah. And also
Sontaran. I was thrilled.
And also a Sontaran that was made to look really, really effective as well.
Mm. The ears are different, but...
Yeah. I like the way when he first came out, they made him look like he was normal height until the soldier walked up to him and the camera kind of levelled out the playing field.
Yeah. Yes.
And also the fact that Sontarans in this story, and obviously there's going to be at least one Sontaran in the Christmas special, I have to say, I just wondered, before I forgot, I absolutely love the collection of characters that we've got in that prequel. Or minisode.
Yes.
So that's the thing that's mainly helping me to look so much forward to this year's Christmas special, because I felt a little bit let down for the last two, you know. So I'm looking forward to that interaction with those characters, and of course Jenna Louise Coleman, who's absolutely lovely, and I think she's going to be fab. So, and I think the Doctor looks great in the top hat and the Dickensian clothes that he's wearing. That fantastic. But anyway, back to this one.
The crumpled hat is great.
Yeah, it looks great. Actually, he does look a bit like in the shadows. I suppose he was meant to look a little bit like the Richard E. Grant character, really. But there you go. Anyway. Meanwhile, there's there were some banter. I think this is filler, isn't it? They're having a little bit of conversation with each other. So I'm just fast forwarding at the moment. I'm not going to watch it as a commentary. I'm just trying to see if I can anything that's actually going to jog my memory, because it's just sort of character scenes that
they're discussing Atmos and what Atmos is supposed to do and blah blah blah.
Not really interesting, really. Anyway, the two soldiers have been converted by the Sontarans.
Wasn't that obvious possessed acting?
Yes. They obviously hadn't had any lessons.
Martha wasn't really looking, was she? Could you come with us, please, down this scary corridor?
Yeah, but the Doctor spotted it. You could tell the Doctor spotted it straight away, by the way. That was quite good acting by Tennant to show that he knew of something. You made me forget something. I'm going to have to rewind it now. Oh yes, the possessed acting by the two soldiers. They didn't get any lessons from Sarah Jane Smith.
She's the best possessed actress.
Elizabeth Sladen was. I mean, especially in Hand of Fear, she's Eldred must live. then we get the scene with Donna and the Doctor when she says she's going. Well, basically, she's going to go and visit a family, and the Doctor thinks that she's leaving.
Yeah, he thinks she's leaving for good. Yeah.
Let me say something about this time watching it versus the other time. This pair of episodes I rewatched quite a bit. It's been probably about a year, and this time watching that scene, it went on too long.
Yeah, it was all right. I just love the "you Dumbo."
Yeah.
You just mean you got to visit them, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Now, the first time I saw it, Dumbo, I thought she was leaving for good as well, and it's like, oh my gosh,
I love that.
She's leaving. So I was taken in.
Anyway, right. Yes. So that was good. Of course, we knew then that she was going to visit a family, that we were going to get to see Wilf. Steady on, Reese. There's this chap that Martha's sort of examining, who's also possessed. Supposed to be some sort of cheap labour bloke or something?
That was the impression I had.
Now, it seems that in this country at the moment that the cheap labour is offered by lots of Polish people. Because working at the co-op, a lot of the drivers that come in to deliver are Polish drivers, and I'm thinking that they're very, very skilled workers, but they, in this country, they get paid a certain amount, which in Poland is quite a lot of money, but in this country it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think they're being taken advantage of to a certain degree. Enough of politics. Of course, we are quite a nice country to live in. Suppose it balances out a little bit. So, there's a big sort of emotional reunion between Wilf and Donna.
I felt like I was intruding
a little bit there. Go on. Yes, you were saying.
I like the comment that Donna's mother says when Donna says she's been traveling, something about, what are you, Michael Palin?
Oh, yeah. But I even like the little scene as Donna, when the neighbor says, oh, you know, I haven't seen you for a few days or whatever she says. And as Donna's walking, you're going through all the places she's been and all that she has seen. And in her mind, how much time has passed to get that idea. Boy, when you travel with the Doctor, it's like no time at all.
This is quite interesting because Wilf is asking Donna if she is safe with the Doctor, which is ironic because the Doctor wasn't actually safe with Wilf in the end. And also that got me thinking, Wilf's first appearance in Doctor Who, or actually Bernard Cribbins's first picture appearance in Doctor Who, would be Voyage of the Damned, starring Kylo Minogue, and Kylo Minogue was singing live on the Strictly Come Dancing programme this evening. And she's lovely, and she was singing Locomotion. That was her first ever hit single in 1989. She's been around for four different decades, and she still looks like a teenager.
Plastic anyway, surgery.
She has not had plastic surgery. Leave her alone. It's Kylie. There are
procedures they can do now plastic surgery.
Can't speak of Kylie like that. She doesn't have plastic surgery. What an absurd notion.
Can I mention Elizabeth Slayton?
She's simply regenerated.
Do you reckon Elizabeth Slayton had plastic surgery then?
Well, she's had procedures.
Has she?
You wonder why she died looking like she was maybe 35 years old?
That's very controversial, Mary. But this is what I lie. This is why we have her on the show.
I refuse to listen.
Today's celebrities have to do something.
No, I don't believe it. I'm sorry, no. Elizabeth Slayton and Kylie Minogue, perfect. Moving on.
So describe one of these pork pies that Wilf has been hiding and eating behind Donna's mother's back. I mean, a pork pie in a wrapper. We don't have anything like that.
Do you want to know what a pork pie is?
Yeah.
It's a pie with pork in it.
Okay.
Well, basically, the contents of a sausage.
Shaped like, or it's a British thing.
It's just a sort of very thick, crusted pastry pie with sausage meat in it.
And potatoes sometimes, and vegetables.
Sometimes, certain types of pork pie have a boiled egg and sausage meat in it. So you get the boiled egg encased in the sausage meat.
And this is like something you go down to your convenience store and pick up.
Yeah, we sell them. They're sort of chilled, ready to eat.
Mary, where are you seeing those? I don't see those in Georgia or Tennessee.
Well, we have a store here in Little Dayton, Ohio. Run by a man from Wales, and his wife is English, and they import and sell a lot of these foodstuffs.
Mary, I tell you what, I'll give you a mission to offend. Which one's the Welsh one?
The man.
Right, go up to him and say, what part of England is Wales in? Go on.
I don't dare.
Go on.
He's a sweetheart.
Because I remember when I was a rather scamp of a teenager. You wouldn't believe that, but I was once upon a time. And it cost a fortune to actually phone abroad. Because it wasn't my phone bill, so I just found a random number in the United States of America. God knows what time it was, but I didn't really care. And they picked it up, and I said, oh, hello, I'm phoning from Cardiff. And the bloke at the other end goes, what, Cardiff, England? And I put the phone down. Anyway.
No, the other one.
Pardon?
Never mind.
Anyway, right. So, but it was only about 10-second call. Wouldn't have costed my granddad too much money, really. Anyway, right. This little chap that plays the sinister, clever clogs.
Did anyone else get this kind of Mark Zuckerberg vibe?
He was a bit. Yes. But what I'd like to ask, I've got two Americans in this program. This lad's British. What's his American accent like? You're gone quiet over there. Sorry? Hello?
What does it look like?
No, his accent. What's his American accent? How does it rate as an American accent? Oh, dear.
I really didn't pay close attention.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention to it.
Good. So he's done a good job.
It must have been good if we didn't notice it.
That's the answer I was looking for. Yes, I was impressed. I didn't. When I found out he was actually British, I was quite shocked and surprised. But
he's very British. He speaks quite properly, too.
Yeah. But, he's pretty good actor.
Ryan Sampson. Let's see what he's been in.
Here we go. Because, I mean, you think of the...
Oh, my... Okay.
The chap who was in the Daleks of Manhattan and, the Spider-Man thing. Obviously,
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, well, he had an advantage because didn't he grow up in America? Or is one of his parents American? Or he was born there and he grew up in Britain? I don't know. Anyway, he had exposure to America, so that's how he was able to have such an effective
accent. So this guy does more theater than television, looks like.
Yeah, but he's good. He's good.
That's interesting. The play that he was in most recently is a play called Floyd Collins, which is about a famous caver from Kentucky who was...
Hang on, I know. It's Captain Caveman!
No, a cave explorer.
Okay. Oh, right. Isn't that a spelunker?
well, at the time, no, in the early 20th century. Floyd Collins was just this country bloke who would go into caves and explore, and he finally got trapped in one. But this actor isn't playing Floyd. He's playing a reporter, Skeets Miller.
Okay.
You'll find pictures of Floyd Collins' tombstone on my Facebook page from when I went to Mammoth Cave this past summer.
Cool. Anyway, right, back to the episode. Meanwhile, the Doctor has had a sort of a conference with Christopher Ryan's Sontaran person, and Martha has been kidnapped and has been attached to this machine and is being sort of
converted.
Converted, but meanwhile having a little chat with the Starkey version of the Cyberman. Cyberman?
Cyberman?
What? Whoa.
That was your fault.
Cyberman.
That was your fault. Sontaran. Similar sort of sounding thing. It begins with a syllable and ends
they
with
have
an
three
an.
Syllables. Start
Hang
with
on.
A syllable.
It starts with a s syllable and ends with an syllable, as in the Cyberman and Sontaran. It's very similar, if you think about it. Similar enough for me to cock it up. Anyway, so she gets converted. Now, this reminds me a little bit of the recent episodes of Merlin that have been on the fact that she's been converted, because that's what they've done to Guinevere, and I think it's really annoying.
Whoa. Don't tell me. I've never seen
I don't know if it's going to be a permanent situation. I don't care. This is a Doctor Who podcast, not a Merlin podcast, but I'm a bit disappointed.
Well, that stopped me from asking you, converted to what? What did they have at Merlin's time? That
they turned her
into
a baddie.
The Sontarans travelled back in time and ended up...
In good reason.
Oh, some of those external... Back to Doctor Who. Some of those external shots of the Sontaran base with the little one-man ships going off of it. I love the fact that they're the same globular ships from the old series.
Yeah. Nice.
And they kept that up when they had Sontarans in Sarah Jane a couple of times too.
Yep, they did indeed. It's interesting to note, we've sort of glossed over it slightly, but when they're calling each other on the radio, they use the term greyhound just to keep consistent with the...
Oh, yes.
I was waiting for you to, obviously with all these Land Rovers that are flying around the place, for Kirby to make reference to the number plates. Anything to discover about the number plates?
Didn't have a chance to look them up. Oh, one thing
You've
that did
had
bother me
2 weeks.
I didn't start watching it again until 3 days.
No, it's not that. You've been gallivanting around on other podcasts, isn't it? Come on, admit it.
Oh, he holds it against you.
You've been on other podcasts too, along with Alicia.
That was years ago.
That was years ago, but
yes.
Still.
Doesn't count.
Oh, one thing that bothered me about the Sontarans, always insulting people by saying women's work and stuff, and they're a clone race. They don't have sex.
Yes. Yes. Good point. Yeah. Good point. Well, they always look down on that sort of, what they call it when you've got two, they had a name for the type of reproduction where you need a two different sexes. Oh, it doesn't matter anyway. Oh. They used that in one of their previous incarnations of episode story.
Hermaphrodite?
Oh, what? No. Dear me. Anyway, we just missed a bit where the Doctor and the cute boy soldier, whose name I forget.
Ross.
His name was Ross! Anyway, yes. they're trapped in that Land Rover I was referring to earlier that's been controlled by the Atmos thing.
I love where they jump out and they're expecting it to blow up and it just goes fizzle.
Is that it?
Yeah.
But wouldn't the inertia, when they jump out, wouldn't the inertia carry them forward though? Or am I being a bit pedantic there?
Yes.
Okay. If you say so.
I like that Ross beat Ian Kirk to make a pun. He says that Atmos drives him around the bend.
Oh dear. Anyway,
I thought of Ian when I heard that.
The Doctor turns up on what's that place called? Somebody at the door. Who's at the door?
Somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door.
Somebody answer the door. Right,
the dog trying to get in.
What, the Radigan Academy?
No,
I think that's what he's talking about.
All it is, Alicia threw down a drink container.
Oh.
I think she expects me to fill it and take it back up to her. I may do. But not just yet. Right. Yeah, so the Doctor turns up where Donna's family live and has a bit of a confrontation with Wilf, which I thought was quite interesting because Wilf acts as if he's only just realised it's the Doctor that he saw in Voyage of the Damned. But
it is.
If you remember, will you be quiet and listen? If you remember from the Partners in Crime story when Donna is in the TARDIS waving back at Wilf and he's looking at her through the telescope, who's behind Donna?
No, I see that as he's seeing Donna waving from the TARDIS. He's never seen the TARDIS before.
Who's behind
Donna? He's not focused on the fact that the Doctor's there.
Yeah, the Doctor's behind her, but I don't think he focused on
it. I'd say, there's Donna. Hey, who's that behind her? Oh, I recognise him. He's that bloke that was in Voyage of the Damned with that Australian bird.
What did he say?
Well, maybe he did. Maybe seeing him this time is another, you know, it's like, oh, yes, hello, you know, like seeing him again.
Anyway.
And then when Donna's mother comes out and says, it's you.
From the wedding.
Yeah, I do like that. I do like these references in this particular scene. It's good.
It played around the fact that it was another actor playing Wilf at the time by saying that Wilf actually had Spanish flu or something like that, and it was actually her husband that was at the wedding.
You know, somebody said, I think it was Kirby, talked about there's some deleted scenes involving Donna's dad, which I haven't watched yet. I must get around to watching those. I think it might be quite emotional, though.
They're an extra in Partners in Crime.
Partners in Crime.
Must watch it. Yeah. Must watch it. Meanwhile, something makes Wilf get in the car. And then, of course, he's trapped in and the gas starts coming out. And then all the gas starts coming out of all the cars that got Atmos.
Could the Doctor be more useless than trying to get Wilf out of that car? I mean, he's just jimmying around the edges.
Yeah,
and he eventually goes and stands in the middle of the road.
Yeah, stands out so the sun can shine and make his coat look really good, yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually Sylvia who comes out.
Well, you've got to get a cliffhanger somehow.
But Sylvia takes care of things. Great.
Yeah. Yes. I love Donna's saying.
It's one of Sylvia's
best.
Donna says,
I can't believe you have an axe.
Yes.
That's right.
Well, everyone needs an axe, and then you need to go out and get a trowel.
What?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
A trowel in your pocket and an axe by the front door.
Oh, yes, sorry. Right. I suddenly realised what you're referencing. Yes.
You call yourself a Doctor Who fan.
No, of course, I'm myself somebody who's quite tired because I did have to stay up to 12:45 last night waiting for Match of the Day to show the Southampton game. Southampton won, and Southampton don't win very many Premier League games. And it started at 10:15, and I had to wait to an hour and a half into the programme before I saw my team play. And
is this the team that Matt Smith was on?
No, Oldham he plays for. Not the Matt Smith. Yes, never mind. Anyway, so yeah, Donna's mum smashes the windscreen with a axe. So the Doctor doesn't save the day in this particular instance.
Well, he should have axed her.
God. Easy, Reese. I think Kirby must realise. Hang on. No, Magic isn't in the room at the moment. It's very unlike him, actually, not to be in while I'm recording the show.
I'm surprised he hasn't made his paradox jokes, seeing as we have Dr.
Mark. No,
Jones
please don't
episode.
Encourage him. Do not encourage him. Yes. Calm down. Oh, sorry, that was you, Kirby, wasn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, right, so the episode then starts off with basically a continuation. Wilf is saved, and Martha's still carrying on being a bit sinister. All she really has to do to be sinister is walk around with a serious expression on her face.
One thing I liked watching it again, I mean, the first time through, you didn't... you knew that it was duplicate even the first time you watched this, but still, you see the Doctor reacting to the fact that he knows. Okay, that's it.
Mm.
The first time you watch it, you don't know that the Doctor knows that she's a duplicate. But then after you've seen it once, you know that he knows it, she's a duplicate, and so you can see him recognize that she is a duplicate.
I'm not too sure. I seem to remember watching it the first time. And as soon as the duplicate Martha met the Doctor, I was looking for his face, and I think he realized fairly quickly that she was...
Well, I see that now, but the first time I saw it, I did not see that.
I'm pretty sure.
That was my not being very observant, I guess.
Anyway, the Doctor gives Donna the key. I think it's the key
Yay.
To the TARDIS.
Yes, finally.
Yes, I hope obviously she had some hand gel, just in case it had any, you know, alien germs on it or anything. And she goes to the TARDIS. And the Doctor then goes to HD.
Excuse me.
What, did you break wind?
Adam?
Adam.
The scenes where the newscasts from all over the world, in the past few months in September when the show was on again, they had a new special here on BBC America called Doctor Who in America, and they interviewed the actress who does the American newscaster.
Newsreader, yes.
Yes, yes, they did.
Did they tell her she needs to get a better hairstylist?
Well, it was actually very interesting because she really enjoyed doing it and could practically reel off all of the episodes she was in as well.
Like, but she didn't obviously get enough money from it to get her hair done or anything. It's a bit of a shame.
No, she said that if they ask her again, she's right there, ready.
What, to get her hair done or to appear in Doctor Who?
No, that's her. The hairstyle is...
terrible, yes, I know.
It's iconic now. Every time she's on, they got to have the same hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, like I said... Donna goes into the TARDIS, and then the soldiers say, ready for transport. I'm sure that's something from Star Trek, but never mind. And I thought it was quite interesting, they had to walk out of shot before the TARDIS actually did get beamed up to the Sontaran spaceship.
Yeah.
I would have thought they were more interesting to have it disappear while they're walking out of shot, not wait until they're out of shot. Maybe they didn't have enough money to achieve that particular effect. I don't know.
I didn't think about that. It's a good point.
But anyway, so she's there, she opens the door and sort of peeks out and sees those of Sontaran sort of going about their work.
How does she keep mispronouncing Sontaran?
Sontaran, isn't it?
Sontaran.
Sultana.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that.
Because that's
it's just one of those things where if you don't know, you could do that.
Yes, yeah. It's a very nice tune. Thank you. Diddle-lim.
What?
Diddle-lim.
Oh, that's my phone. People are texting me.
Yeah, my phone just gave a TARDIS noise. Someone texted me.
My phone.
Oh no, it's probably someone has just sent an email to all of us.
Yeah, all right. I don't know. Never mind. Diddle-lim. So
he's Robert liking things on Facebook.
All the Clever Clogs people in their red hoodies go out and sort of outside to survey the view, and you can see the London Eye in the background. I do believe, and one of the actresses was in EastEnders after she did this, and in EastEnders she was really, really very, very pretty. She's quite pretty in this, but doesn't sort of stand out as being quite pretty. Maybe it's because when she got to EastEnders she was a couple of years older and she looked a bit, I don't know, I'm rambling.
You sound worse than me.
The Doctor's got a plan. I think he wants Donna to I think he's placed Donna in quite a lot of danger here. Why? I shouldn't really complain. He does that all the time, doesn't he?
He didn't expect her to be transported up there, but while she's up there, take advantage of it.
So are you saying he sent her to the TARDIS for her own safety?
Yeah.
Yes, because she was choking.
Convenient to the plot. Methinks.
Yes.
Yeah, when he ran into that alley, he expected the TARDIS to be there, but it wasn't. So he didn't expect it to transport away.
Anyway, he does some political sort of...
How come that one, the chief Sontaran, is the only one with facial hair?
Yes.
I thought they were clones.
Yeah.
It's quite funny that he uses a sonic screwdriver to sort of switch it off, and there's a cartoon. Mm. What is the cartoon that comes on? Anybody know?
You tell us.
No, yeah. I thought you'd tell me. Anyway, so basically the Sontaran announces to the Doctor that they've got his ship. That makes the Doctor sort of slightly change his attitude. And
one of my favourite lines was, "Don't you impugn my honour?" Oh, I'm glad you didn't say belittle, because I'd have a field day.
Speaking of Santarans being clones, Mary, if you've never seen The Two Doctors,
no, I haven't.
Shame on you.
The Santarans in that one are like a foot different.
Yeah, they're really tall. Yeah.
Well, I've seen pictures of them. They all look different. From every episode, they look different.
Well, I mean, there's two together.
Oh.
Clones, and one of them is a foot taller than the other.
Yeah.
And they're both, and even the shortest one is not.
That was a surprising and very unusual bit of continuity stupidity from John Nathan Turner, who's usually very good at continuity, a bit over the top, I should say.
But thank
God. Yeah.
The short fat one and the tall thin one.
The Santarans were in a, and Jim will fix it. And remember, Jim got kind of in trouble recently, even after he died.
Yes. Don't really much you can say about that, apart from the fact he was a raving pervert. And it's a shame, because all those people that were basically told that they were liars for all those years. Oh dear, it's very sad. But what can they do? He's dead. What can they do? They're going to talk about it, and they'll put their stories in the papers and maybe make a bit of money out of it, but ultimately they can't do anything to Mr. Fix It. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Yes, the girl I was talking about, the one with the red sort of bow in her hair, very pretty in EastEnders.
Oh, her, okay.
A bit plainer in this story. Still actually quite pretty, but not as pretty as she was in EastEnders. But anyway, so he does the sort of maniac-y sort of thing with a gun, doesn't he?
That was a good job of going absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
And then at the end he jumps up and down saying, "I am smart!"
Right.
This newsreader character that you referred to earlier does actually have a name, but you never actually see her name on screen, which is a bit weird, isn't it? No? Okay, right. Fine.
I was just thinking about that. Is it weird? Yeah, I guess so.
It is. Wilf is sort of, what's he doing, taping the doors? I don't know, I think to try and keep the gas out.
Yeah, he's sealing them in. Which then I don't understand, because then he turns around inside. And he runs outside.
Oh, well. Anyway, there's a countdown to add to the tension to the Santaran sort of releasing this gas all around the whole world. The Doctor, obviously, David Tennant, is showing his teeth a lot. And he's doing his,
and I don't
doing his panting a lot. He needs his Ventolin. At this point, because he's doing a lot of him and Darth Vader.
Well, we're rushing past another scene where Donna Noble talking to her family on the phone. It was a great scene because she's sitting there feeling helpless and alone, and that would be me, you know. So I really felt for her in that moment.
Yes, that is brilliant, Mary, because you just reminded me of something that happened. Why can't I speak? Something that happened in. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, that involved Colin Baker. Now, as I said, Helen Flanagan is about 21, and she keeps on going off and not doing these trials, which will earn them food, and then coming back and getting sort of slightly berated by her hungry friends. But Colin Baker and this Member of Parliament, called Nadine somebody or other, were sort of more on Helen's side because they have daughters of that age, and Colin got a bit emotional when he said, "I've got to protect her because I've got daughters that age," and they would react in the same way. And when he said about his daughters, he started filling up, and I thought it was quite moving.
Yeah.
Aww. So there you go. Back to Doctor Who. So the countdown's gone to zero, and missiles launched, says the screen. But they didn't know if the missiles had been launched or not, and of course the Santarans had put some sort of block on these missiles. Had they not?
Yes. They're being stopped by the clone Martha, who has to press no every
all
couple
the time.
Of
yes.
yes, I remember. That
you know,
now,
they kind of left that. They didn't finish that plot element at the end. You hope that they disabled them at the end.
Yeah. I suppose it was irrelevant, but it's interesting to note that. Excuse me, I've got a burp coming. told you. It's interesting to note.
Lovely.
I said, excuse me. that behind Martha's head is Sydney. Is that a reference to Sydney Newman? Come on, wakey wakey.
I missed that.
Yeah, I did too.
It's a clock. They're obviously world time.
I just wanted
to throw in an Ian Kirk style gag.
Speaking of references, we had a reference to the Brigadier.
Yes, we did indeed.
And the fact that the Doctor doesn't know if he worked for them in the 70s or the 80s.
Indeed. So, there's lots of unit soldiers waiting corridors to die, basically, as the Doctor...
And poor Ross gets killed.
Get them out of there. And
get them out of there!
And that's when the Doctor said his name was Ross, wasn't it?
His name was Ross. Ross.
That's it. But it does die a fairly good death. The way he throws back...
And the two soldiers who were converted killed off screen, too.
Hang on, as I said, there was Sydney mentioned behind Martha's head in an earlier shot, and then behind the who is the unit leader bloke who stands in for the Brigadier? I can't remember his name there.
I can't remember either.
You know who I'm talking about, though, don't you?
I'm looking.
We're looking.
I can't remember his name, but anyway, behind his head is Paris. Colonel Mace. But behind his head is Paris. Is that a reference to the Eiffel Tower and City of Death, maybe?
Oh my gosh. We are digging deep here.
Anyway, he's showing his teeth and spitting. Ooh, there's lots of sort of spittle hanging off
the
Doctor's teeth.
Everyone's wearing shoes. Is that a reference to Smithy Jones where the Doctor takes his shoe off?
Hang on, Unit are in this one. Is that a reference to the whole of the John Pertwee era?
Yes.
Anyway, right. So yes, there's Tom Baker era. Now there's a battle starts up at this point. Now this battle, as I've said before, battles make me feel a bit sleepy. But this battle is a right sort of length for me. It doesn't go on too long.
It's a bit unfair.
I do like the glee that the Santarans have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well done to show the sort of people they are.
Yeah, and this does show also that this is where everything turns around for them, because the clever kid's boy, this is when he realises he's only being used by the Sire.
Did you catch the reference that the Santarans are losing their war against the Rutan?
I did, and I just knocked my chin on the microphone.
Well,
I didn't get the sense
they were losing it. I thought that was just still ongoing.
The doctor makes a comment that they are losing.
Yeah, obviously, it was good that they'd actually reference the Rutan. Now, you would be interested to see if they actually do bring the Rutan back at some point in the history of future Doctor Who. Maybe. As they can render them more realistic now. You thought that'd be a nice little challenge for them. Anyway, Clever Clogs Nipper beams himself back to Earth and has a bit of a grizzle.
What did you call him?
Clever Clogs Nipper, because I can't remember his actual name.
Fair enough.
Radigan.
Stupid name.
I like Clever Clogs.
Oh, we're going to stick with Clever Clogs Nipper.
Clever Clogs.
Yeah, I like it.
So, yes.
Sorry about the Doctor. Someone's playing Words with Friends with me, and I just got a notification.
The Doctor phones Martha and gets her to do a few little things for him. involving... little sort of... Is it a sledgehammer? It's not a sledgehammer. It is a sledgehammer. It's a bit light. No, sledgehammers are much bigger than that. It's a hammer, anyway.
It's a rubber mallet.
Yeah.
It's not a rubber mallet. It's a mallet, isn't it? I think it's rubber because it's a prop. I think it's actually meant to be a lead
no,
mallet.
I've got a rubber mallet.
So do we. Yeah.
Right. Yes, we do too.
Excuse me, edit point.
I use
a rubber mallet?
No.
What?
Oh, don't edit it out.
What?
We made a mistake. Own up to it.
Yeah. We use ours when we go camping to put in tent stakes, for instance.
Okay, thank you for the... Okay, so she whacks the Santarin on the...
Probic vent.
I got in ahead of you. Thank you. The probic vent and... But I did like the fact that there was a door mechanism that required a
three fingers.
Three fingered hand. And the doctor said, well, you've got three fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like a Vulcan salute thing she had to do to actually press the thing, which I thought was really good.
Well, that's straight out of the old series, too.
Was that a reference to Star Trek? No. Why can't I speak tonight?
No, I didn't sense it, even though I was a Star Trek fan before I was a Doctor Who fan.
There's two references to Star Trek. I did not sense
that as being a Star
Trek
reference.
I'm having a bit of a laugh.
I'm trying to
reference to Star Trek. Donna's phone is like a flip thing, like a Star Trek communicator.
It's
like a 90s phone, but
it's one of those Motorola flip phone razors, aren't they? Yes, my daughter had one of those for about 5 minutes before she broke it. You know how she broke it?
How?
Because in those days, phones used to come with a little thing on the side that you could attach a little charm to. Yes, and the Motorola Razr had one of these little charm attachments. I think you could also attach little carrying sort of handles as well. Unfortunately, if you close the said Motorola Razr with the charm on it inside the screen bit, of the, unfortunately, it actually ruins the screen.
Oops.
Yes.
Yeah, my
Motorola Razr didn't have that little thing you're talking about.
Yeah, mine did. I had one.
They
and
did.
My, just didn't I had realize one. That's I what didn't it was have for. A thing.
Yeah.
Are we done talking?
Maybe the UK version had that.
Are we done talking? No, this is a 20 megabyte podcast. We're not done talking over
That's
each other.
That's why I go now, quiet.
Interestingly, my kids and I were down in the Atlanta version of Chinatown last weekend, and we were going through this one shop, and we found completely out of context, a phone charm of Mr. Bean's teddy bear.
Rowan Atkinson, of course, played the Doctor in Curse of the Little
But the girls bought it for me. I said, "Oh, that's cool." And then I went on to another store, and then they went away and came back, and they bought it for me. The thing is that I have no place to put a phone charm on.
No,
phone
don't
charm.
Use it. Don't
I've
use
never
it.
Heard of a phone charm.
No, don't use a phone charm. No, it's pointless. By the way, talking to Mr. Bean and Rowan Atkinson. Mr. Bean, created by Rowan Atkinson and Richard Curtis, who wrote one of the best Doctor Who stories of all time.
Yes.
Which one is that?
Vincent and the Doctor.
See how I threw my voice over to Australia then and sounded like Reese.
Very good. And you sounded a lot like Reese.
Well, he's been on the show for a while. I just picked up the...
Anyway, imitate Robert and you can imitate Reese.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Reese can do Kirby.
That's right.
Pardon?
No, he doesn't do that.
He doesn't say that.
No, he goes,
And I would like to mention...
Hang on, I'll just check Wikipedia.
There you go.
Ah, dear.
While we're here, I was loving the transition of Donna from, lost and scared inside the TARDIS to now that she's creeping out and following his directions, she's getting her old cocky self back again, and
yeah,
I like
they're
that.
Trying, they're trying to build her up for her role in Torchwood, of a series two of Torchwood, aren't they, to sort of give her that sort of more adult, sort of grown-up sort of Martha.
No, so I'm talking Donna.
Yeah, she said Donna.
Edit point.
No.
Oh, I didn't hear it. There was a when it was
a
Skype. It was a Skype. It didn't quite. Yeah. Somebody talked over each other and it cut out, and I didn't quite catch what you said there, Mary.
Did you catch the empty child reference?
Yes. Oh yes. Are you my mummy?
My mummy.
Anyway, the great big spaceship, is it the Valiant that's hovering above?
Yeah. It's not a spaceship. It's a flying aircraft carrier.
Yeah, right. Yes. Anyway, it's lasers. I just
it can't
think
go into space.
Yeah, right. But laser things that sort of, there's six of them that sort of club together and at a point and then change into one laser that goes off in a different direction.
Yeah, it's the Death Star pattern.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which they did the same thing a few episodes ago in the Christmas. The Tennant's first story. What's that one?
Tennis first story is Christmas
Invasion.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, so another little battle ensues after the the laser thingamajig was sort of...
Which I want to know, why is it when the unit soldiers' guns all freeze up in the presence of the Santarans earlier, why aren't they freezing up now? Now they seem to be killing
us. They got explained.
Tell me.
You go for it, Kirby, if you got the explanation.
I'm trying to find the exact alloy for the jacket. The doctor told them that it was the copper that was expanding in the barrel, which, by the way, if that was so, they still should have... that doesn't quite make sense, because they should have still exploded and the bullet come out.
Of course it should, yeah. The gunpowder would have made it even more volatile. The old gun would have exploded.
The gunpowder should have exploded. But anyway, they got bullet jackets are made of a different alloy, which isn't going to expand under the particular whatever it was that the Suntarans were using.
So I thought that was pretty clever.
I must have napped through that. Okay.
Actually, the doctor mentions it twice.
All right.
Anyway. All right, Kirby, all right.
Basically, they're fighting them with silver bullets.
Edit point.
It's funny because the doctor's panicking and Martha's running around still pressing the thing on a sort of mobile phone, which, interesting, is a touchscreen thing. Obviously,
as soon as you said that,
touchscreen technology would have been quite a sort of new thing. The Santaran, the Starkey Santaran, is going around killing people with great glee.
Commander Starkey.
Yes. And the Doctor's using the sonic screwdriver as a pointless torch, because, of course, the lighting in the corridor is pretty bright. And then they find the real Martha, who's unconscious. And it's quite a moving scene, really, isn't it, when he disconnects the real Martha and the other Martha falls on the ground and...
dies.
The Marthas have a bit of a heart-to-heart, which is...
Sounds like a sitcom.
Quite sad.
So Martha gets her only other scene where she actually gets to act.
Yeah. And she has to do it twice, because you've got one... the real Martha looking sort of a bit...
Didn't the stunt double work well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the Starkey Santaran gets
killed, and he says,
wonderful, as he dies. Yeah, go on.
Next week, she's not acting very well when she has all of her emotional scenes with Mr.
Yeah, we'll see about that. We'll talk about that next week.
No, I'm just saying, in this story, she only had two scenes in which I thought she had some acting to do.
Well, no. I'd say she had to act possessed, so that was acting.
No,
surely.
She just had to walk around like a dummy. That wasn't acting.
She's normally quite a bubbly person, so she had to pretend to be a serious, very possessed
normal
person. Yeah. So she had to do a bit of acting there. So it was quite a sad scene as Martha sort of talked herself to death, I think. So she takes the engagement ring, so obviously implying about the engagement to, was it going to be Mickey, or was it the doctor that he met?
Dr. Milligan,
Dr. Milligan, and I don't recall the ring being taken off of her.
Yeah, I don't either.
How did the clone get it?
Maybe that was a deleted scene. Perhaps. I did actually watch the deleted scenes on this disc. But I can't remember anything really sticking out of my memory that was of any importance, and certainly they didn't show that particular deleted scene.
This disc is unusual because it's got four episodes on it.
Yeah, it is. That's true. Anyway, the Doctor, Donna and Martha sort of beam, to use a Star Trek vernacular, to
I thought you were saying they were very happy.
Very good. Yeah, it's very clever. To Clever Clogs' house. And meanwhile, the gas is starting to sort of come down.
Or you could call him.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm calling him Clever Clogs. I don't care what he's blooming called. It's Clever Clogs. It's much easier to remember.
Facebook guy.
Yeah, okay. Mark Wallenberg. No, that's not Facebook, is it? Oh, stop putting me off. So the Doctor Doctor's rigging up some sort of strange phallic device that's going to kill all the Santarans, and he's basically going to sacrifice himself. Of course. We all knew that it wasn't going to happen, because there wouldn't be much of a TV show left, obviously, if he did succeed. In sacrifice of herself. But in the meantime, he shoots a rocket up into the sky and sets fire to it. Now,
Very pretty.
It did look quite good as far as special effects goes. But when we're on the Sontaran ship, and I'm being a bit pedantic here.
There was no smoke or anything?
No. It looked nice. Don't get me wrong. But they're looking up at the sky. Oop, mm-hmm. And I'll just press the stop button by mistake. They're looking up at the sky, and it goes across the sky. But when you see this shot from space, it's moving a lot faster. I know it's dramatic effect.
Yeah.
But there you go. That's
didn't
all.
Bother me. It's a TV show.
Well, I wondered if the gas was all down around
that
the ground.
That doing me.
So when setting fire to the sky, why isn't it burning on the ground as well?
And also, Mary...
It should have incinerated everyone.
The heat generated by the flames would, of course, would have stirred up the clouds somewhat. And when they went past the clouds were all, like, static.
It was a cool effect.
It just didn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a cool effect.
I don't understand. What does the temperature have to do with it?
It doesn't matter. I'm just having a bit of a. picking holes in it. I enjoyed it really. It did look really good and cool.
I did like the way Teddy was going.
Well, now when he's running onto the Sontaran ship, what is it that he's going? Is he going to explode the ship?
Yeah, he says he must give them a chance. If they say no, he's just going to kill himself and the ship and everybody and all the other Sontarans.
But I heard him say he was going to burn the air on the ship.
Yes,
to kill them all.
Isn't that the air that they were all breathing?
No, he recalibrated before he beamed up.
Yes.
I know, but the air on the ship, isn't it air like he and Donna and everyone who was up on the ship, they were all breathing it.
Yeah, but Donna and that are on Earth, aren't they? He's beaming up to the Sontaran ship and it's just going to destroy the Sontarans and everything.
Okay.
Anyway, so there's a sort of very heroic scene where he says goodbye to his companions who look a bit mortified.
Mm-hmm. But you missed where the one unit woman kisses the commander.
Yeah, I know, because you were talking while that bit was on.
And where did that come from?
It was just a
who knows who cares.
I mean, they never even looked at each other during these episodes.
So it's basically a throwback to the Leela departure, really, because they didn't really look at each other until
ended episode one.
This was another reference to a former episode, and there's a Sontaran but holding some sort of stick. That's obviously a reference to David Copperfield, the magician. Maybe I don't know. Or maybe it's a Harry Potter thing. I don't know. He's holding some sort
of reference to everyone with walking sticks.
Yes.
Oh, good grief! Pardon?
He's a
laptop. Yes, I'm using a laptop, Alicia.
Hello, Alicia.
He took my emails.
I don't care. Laptops.
They took my emails.
No.
You're doing
this
about the same time,
aren't
you?
No. Go away.
Bye. Alicia
Splash. Goodbye. Thank you. Right. Where did we get up to? Oh, yeah. So the doctor's up on the thing, breathing through his teeth whilst all the Sontarans are going Sontaha. They've never done that before, have they? And then Clever Clogs does a very clever thing. That's why I called him Clever Clogs. And swaps positions. I love the way that the thing the doctor was holding just drops into his hand like that. It's really good.
Yeah.
He just presses the button.
I'm surprised it didn't teleport down with him.
No, I don't think it would have done. No, I just like that was a very good scene. Very well
teleported up.
Very well written scene. Very well produced, directed, etc. That worked really, really well for me. Great. Yeah, it was a great. Sort of, what's the word for it?
Ending?
No, a conclusion. Sorry, conclusion to that whole setup.
That's a better word.
Very different from an ending reason.
Yeah. Oh yes.
I suspect a bit of sarcasm there, but I'll overlook it.
No sarcasm at all. Yeah.
So the Doctor lands back on Earth, and everything's all right. And
I love the way Donna hits him before hugging him.
Yeah,
don't do that again.
Great character writing that, unless of course it's something that she decided to do for her character. I don't know if that was directed or not. Either way, it worked really well. Hang on, the dog wants to come in.
Did you?
That's my memory card.
Where's my one then?
I don't know.
Where's your one then? Is this it?
Try to remember.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Door. Oh, anyway, so yes, and then so Wilf tells Donna to go and see the stars. So obviously she's off to Hollywood now to oh, it's a different type of stars, isn't it?
Different stars.
Oh, maybe it's stars, so she can watch Torchwood.
They're getting what? Worse.
Are they?
The jokes, yes.
Oh, it's a joke. Oh, okay. Sorry, no, I'm just trying to gloss over this, but where Donna says goodbye to Wilf. And then, of course, they're going to say goodbye to Martha as well, who's going off to get married. But so the doors of the TARDIS just slam themselves.
They can't shake her off that easily.
Shuddering. It's interesting, talking about these deleted scenes. Of course, the deleted scenes, you know, for some reason the picture quality is better than you see in these episodes, but there's no sort of sound effects dubbed over, and all you hear is the sound of the actual sound of the TARDIS console going up and down and making it studio sound rather than its dubbed over sound. And there's other sounds.
That.
Yeah, but there's other sounds that are completely studio sounds, but that's what made it interesting for me, watching it that way. They still edit it together as it should go, but they've not put on any sound effects.
Are
whatsoever.
Those on this disc or are they on a separate disc?
Certainly on this disc.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Yeah, well worth having a
Adam.
Look at
Adam.
Yeah, Adam.
Adam.
Yeah. So yeah, and of course the next episode is one of my favorites.
Adam, did you did anyone notice as the TARDIS was doing its trap everyone and go crazy at the end that they kept having the camera show the hand in his jar several times?
Yeah, I noticed that too.
We are foreshadowing something with this hand in the jar.
Well, they foreshadowed Rose, didn't they?
Yeah, Rose showed up for what? A half a second?
Oh, yeah. Saying,
Doctor! Something like that. Who? No, that's the Matt Smith Doctor, sorry. Yeah, but it's okay. This story not one of my favourites. I don't really like watching this one because it goes on for a bit too long. It's got some really good bits in it. No, it's good. It's got some good scenes, and I like the Sontarans back. I think they did a good job bringing the Sontarans back the way they did. Wasn't really that interested in the unit being in it because without the brig really, and it didn't feel like unit. Or was it just me? Mm-hmm.
The way the doctor kept treating them, he kept acting towards them like they were irritating him somehow, and I don't know what they did to irritate him.
But he used to do that to a certain extent in his early days with UNIT when he was first trapped on Earth.
Oh.
And with some of the things Brigadier did during his time on Earth that he didn't agree with. He loved them, but it was like a marriage that was sort of, he was just sort of put up with that. He still loved them, but maybe wanted to move on, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, it didn't feel wholly like UNIT to me, but it was okay. It was fun having them there and having the references, the Greyhound references and stuff like that. It was nice having Martha back because I didn't really want Martha to go in the first place. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying I don't like Donna. I just didn't want Martha to go after that just one year. I quite liked her character at the time. So I was quite pleased to have her back in it, although I didn't like her, the way she was introduced by the "I bring you back to Earth" cheesy line at the beginning.
Yeah.
Quite liked the manic sort of loony, you know, the Clever Clogs kid as a character. He was sort of a bit annoying, but then he was very watchable as well.
I did not understand the purpose of the whole academy and those other students, because they really played no part in this story at all. I mean, he could have just been a clever kid in his own laboratory.
True.
No, he couldn't colonize the planet that he wanted to colonize alone.
True.
He had to have the girls there.
He had that plan, didn't he?
Yes, he had to have the girls there, and he could have all of them.
Yeah.
If he could.
Fair enough. So that was, I mean, it was okay. I quite enjoyed aspects of it. I'm just thinking that they could probably have edited this down to one episode because there were a lot of battle scenes, weren't there?
Yeah.
I think it was a bit. It was not as bad as some of the two-parters they had, but it just...
And it was so much better than the other one this writer wrote.
Yes.
I know a lot of people think this is terrible, but I don't think it's terrible. I just think it's okay. You know, it's
I don't mind this one at all.
I did not care for this one.
There's enough in it that I enjoyed to make me say that I'd watch it again. Just basically, again, it's because of it's because of Donna, really. I think. So far, this is probably the worst for me story of the series. But it's still pretty good.
I read somewhere that any story where the Doctor's wearing his blue suit is a bad story, and it's when he wears his brown suit that he has good stories. So the person that I was reading this from said, and this is a prime case of blue suit syndrome.
Well, that's interesting, because having listened to the Bigger on the Inside podcast, where they're covering Fear Her.
Uh-oh.
And what was the episode after Fear Her? It was Fear Her, and they'd also covered someone with Elton in it.
Love and Monsters.
Right. And I can relate to what they were saying, because I was trying to help Fear Her, but I had to agree with them with what they were saying about Fear Her, that they highlighted all the bad things about it, and the bad things about it really do hold up quite well in their argument. However, they were saying the same thing about Love and Monsters, and it has got bad things about it, but I actually really enjoy Love and Monsters.
Yeah, me too. For some reason. We went over that.
They just went on about the, you know, the sort of sexual references with the paving stab and stuff like that. But no, I think that ticks along really nicely. It's just a bit of fun, you know. It's okay. There's a Scooby-Doo bee in it, so what? It's still just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
But they did say, and I know I'm harping back a little bit, and it was a really good point, that Fear Her was sort of rushed through because Stephen Fry was supposed to write an episode for Doctor Who, and it all fell through, so they rushed through this story, Fear Her, and that may be one of the reasons why it wasn't that good.
Oh.
Okay. But this one, however, is okay. It's just a bit of fun. It's just the Sontarans are back, and they've done a really good job with them. And
One of the ones I'll go back and watch this particular series all the time. There's only one episode which it's not my least favorite of the series, but it's the one that I've seen the
least.
Don't
tell us what it is. Don't tell us what it is, and when you come to it, you can tell us then.
Be that
way. Or have we already seen it?
No, we haven't.
That's right then. Okay, because next week is Doctor's Daughter, which, like I say, is one of my favourites, and not least for the fact that George and Moffat looks really gorgeous in it.
Or the Doctor's daughter, sorry.
And clearly, and clearly David Tennant's thought exactly the same thing. Right. Anybody else want to say anything more about the Sontaran stratagem and Poison Sky?
I'd just like to say that after the Sontarans we've had recently, I can't take them seriously because they have been quite amusing.
Yeah, maybe. But
you mean the nurse?
Yeah.
Yes.
But then,
I thought he died at the end of that episode. How come he's? I guess we're just being timey wimey.
Because that is him.
But then,
yeah.
Because people are speculating about Clara and Oswin, whether they're the same people or maybe they're related or they're. But she said they're completely different characters. But she said it in a way that maybe she was being a bit tongue in cheek, bit Moffat.
Yeah, Matt said that'd be impossible, wouldn't it? Oh yes, definitely.
Well, and I've heard it put out there that why doesn't he recognize her voice?
True, but she's not quite speaking in the same
because
way.
Because in Asylum of the Daleks, she was actually always going. Using a Dalek voice.
You're saying that that's how the Doctor heard her, but he would have recognised her as a Dalek voice.
She woke him up. You know, from that moment on, he knew her by her voice.
True. Anyway, so we move on. Anybody want to say anything more about Sontaran stratagem and Poison Sky before we move on to news? It's gone all quiet, so I say that's
apparently not.
Okay.
Yeah, apparently not.
Sarah Jane Adventures and Moffat win at the Writers Guild Awards. Both Sarah Jane Adventures and Stephen Moffat I've just said this, of course, were winners at the Writers Guild of Great Britain today. That was the 14th of November. The Curse of Clyde Langer, what a fine story that was, written by Phil Ford, mm-hmm. and featured the in the final series, I can't write, read, or speak at the moment,
no.
Sarah Jane Adventures, was named Best Children's, it's just why I'm not doing any writing tonight, isn't it? The Best Children's TV Script, beating fellow nominees 4 O'Clock Club, Maths, and Horrible Histories. Horrible Histories. I think that's the one written by one of my sort of friends on Facebook who I met once in the Isle of Wight, called Hannah George. Hello, Hannah. Oh, she's not listening. But she's like I have to give her a mention because she's the one who used to flatmate with Toby Whithouse, which enabled me to get Toby Whithouse on the show. So, Hannah George. I like Hannah. She is from the Isle of Wight. She comes from Ventnor. She's was a stand-up comic. Now she's a comedy writer, and she writes for various British comedy sort of cult series, one of them being Horrible Histories. Anyway, and although Sherlock lost, this is back to what the news was saying, although Sherlock lost out to appropriate adult in the Best Short Film TV Drama category, co-writer Stephen Moffat, who was cited alongside Mark Gatiss and Stephen Thompson for the reimagining of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. My glasses have got
I'm
a
only
slight...
guessing it says that because for some reason DoctorWhoNews.net is not coming up on my screen.
Imagining. Oh, it does say that, sorry. Of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Detective Classic was given the Writers Guild Special Award for Outstanding Writing. I wish I hadn't read that. That was quite boring, really, wasn't it? Sound magazine, so I'm not even going to go on about that. Apparently there's a figure of Sutek coming out. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's really, really good.
Does it come with a little hand holding the cushion down?
Pardon? You've lost me on that one.
There's a little hand in the Pyramids of Mars holding the pillow down.
No.
When he sits up, a hand of one of the production crew, one of the crews there, and it holds his cushion down as he gets up.
Did you notice that after seeing the info text?
No.
Oh, I'll have to look out for that.
Once you see it, you cannot not see
no.
it.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so what you're saying is that, because we haven't done Pyramids, but they can't speak! We haven't done the Pyramids of Mars on this show, so next time we go back to doing some classics, we'll have to do that one.
Yes.
If not, least for me to spot that one.
One of my absolute favourite stories of all time.
Well, you've given it away, really, though, haven't you? Never mind.
Yeah, we liked it. There we go. That's
everything. Apparently, this is not in the news. It is in the news. Alex Kingston has recorded an audiobook of the book that was in Angels Take Manhattan, which is The Angel's Kiss. And she's actually recorded it, so it's going to come out. So that'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it? No?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Doctor Who is up for People's Choice Award again. Doctor Who is once again up for the American People's Choice Award after making it onto the 2013 shortlist for nominees for favourite sci-fi stroke fantasy TV show.
Oh, no kidding.
It faces competition, though, from Once Upon a Time, Supernatural, The Vampire Diaries, and The Walking Dead. Apparently, Once Upon a Time is very good, but Deb watches it. So there you go.
Which one did Deb watch?
Once Upon a Time.
Oh, okay.
There seems to be a bit of a thing these days about reimagining. See, I've said it myself, of like old fairy tales and things. So but that is one of them. But apparently, very good.
But they're being quickly overwhelmed by zombies and vampires.
Zombie Flesh Eaters is back out again, isn't it? Yeah. Which I seem to remember. The only thing that stands out in my memory from watching one of those zombie films was a scene in which somebody's eyeball gets pierced by some wood from a door frame or something like that. They do this close-up thing, special effect. And I rather thought at the time I watched it that perhaps you might close your eye before the thing went into it. But there you go.
It wouldn't do much.
It's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
No, but the eye's wide open and the thing goes straight into it just for the effect of the horror effect of it. You know?
Yeah, because you're going to automatically close your eye. So.
Yeah, you will do. It's a reflex, isn't it? Something's coming towards it, you will close it. It's just a reflex. You can't control it. Unless you're dead, of course, and of course you get your eye open, but I don't think in this. She was screaming. So, I'm so scared I keep my eye open when there's Spike coming towards it. Anyway.
Other news.
Yes. Other news.
You'll have to tell me, but Doctor Who news is not coming up on for me at all.
Oh, I've got it. I've got it up.
Oh, yeah. Doctor Who has been cancelled. There will not be a Series 8 of Doctor Who. It's been confirmed tonight by Meven Stoffert.
I see that...
Did you just burp then?
No.
Long one.
That the That's quite impressive, Carol, actually. I'm sorry, the Christmas special will be on Christmas Day in the States at 9 o'clock at Yay. Night, but in Australia, not till the next day at 7:30.
So it's called the Boxing Day special.
Yeah,
then,
it's
Australia.
A Boxing Day show.
I think it'll be on iView, though.
Isn't that something to do with that? If it's shown on Christmas Day in this country, it's already been Christmas Day in Australia by the time it goes out.
Yeah. Instead of snowman, I wish we'd had Yeti.
Yeah, I have seen the glimpses of the actual snowmen themselves
in the trailers.
They look a bit silly, don't they, with their sort of pointed
teeth. Yeah, a little teethy.
I think it's all going to be a bit of fun.
I wonder if they can be defeated with a flamethrower or something.
Or just sort of get them to bite on something hard and it probably break their little pointed teeth then, wouldn't it? Bearing in mind their pointed teeth might be made out of snow. But anyway, it's all a bit of fun. I think it's going to be one of the better Christmas specials that we've had in recent years, basically because of the cast and the characters they've got in it. I hope I'm not going to be let down, Mr. Moffat. Thank you. I know what Ben's going to think before we even watch a blooming thing. So.
Yep.
Have you seen the new publicity picture of Matt Smith in front of the TARDIS?
No, I haven't. No.
Off the Christmas special? I don't like it. He looks all dark and pouty and...
Yeah,
I don't
post
like it
to the Facebook page.
Okay.
To the Facebook page.
Do as you're told.
Except, I'm having trouble with the Doctor Who news page also, in that I'm only getting text. No pictures are coming.
Yeah, that's the problem I'm having.
That's censoring, isn't it? I've got some pictures, but not all on it. Anyway, what were we talking about before you distracted me from...
I don't know.
Apparently
snowman
is not
cancelled.
Of Oddball. Yeah, what about Doctor Who being cancelled?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you put me off. I nearly forgot to mention that was a joke, listeners. I wasn't being truth. That was not actually happening.
Well, I didn't believe him for 1 second.
Oh, hang on. What's just come up on the screen? Apologies for problems experienced on the news guide pages at present. This is down to server issues. That's right. They always say that, don't they? It was a problem website. It's a server.
However, I did read that after the Christmas special, there's going to be 8 more episodes.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yay. Oh, 8.
Hooray. Win.
Yeah, that's good, though. But because we've already heard that the 50th anniversary is just going to be a collection of special episodes before they do Series 8.
Oh, we have.
And Matt Smith is going to be in Series 8. So there's not going to be a lot of Doctor Who towards the end of 2013, but there may be a lot of Doctor Who in 2014.
I missed that there was not going to be an actual anniversary episode.
However,
World
ends on the 31st of December, so let's make the most of the Christmas special.
And the 49th anniversary.
I thought the world was going to end on the 21st of December.
Yeah, 21st. That's
the 31st.
That's canon. 21st of December.
It's not
real.
So we
won't get to see the episode then.
You're arguing about the date the world isn't actually going to end at all.
Won't you look silly if you're wrong?
I mean, don't you read your
predictions? I'll be dead. I won't look anything.
So hang on. What day is the world supposed to end?
December 21st, 2012.
We'll have to bring out our last ever episode then on the 20th of December.
And there won't be anybody to argue where we fit on the charts.
Yeah, so we can say goodbye to the listeners and everything. There we go. What day of the week is that?
The link that I put on the Facebook page that I got from the Dirty Hooers podcast.
You've been on some pornography sites?
Dirty Hooers.
Oh, sorry.
Sure I have.
A link to where you can go over to johnlevine.com and buy
the
Ballads of Sergeant Benson.
Yes, I have seen that.
A very strange hairstyle he has as well. It's a bit like a slightly younger Ronald Reagan in that picture.
Yeah, I guess he does. I was amazed by seeing that.
Reese Parton, what's he said? Robert, you being so unwell brings tears to our... Reese. Oh. I echo these statements. Sentiments, sorry. Statements, good grief. What's the matter with me tonight? Do you want me to read that out, Reese? I don't want to get you in all emotional. Go, listeners, go to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group and you can read what Reese says about Robert. It's very moving.
Just because Robert said that all our kind messages brings tears to his eyes, and I was just saying that him being unwell brings tears to ours.
Hang on, I'm going to type something. Oh, that's not how you spell it.
S-O-M-E-T-H-I-N-G.
I don't know how I managed to spell the word always, T-W-A-T-S.
It's like something from the Goon Show.
Old ways.
Hanging on. Might have to edit this. I can't speak and write at the same time. There we go. Right, so I was going to do eBay, wasn't I?
I don't know.
I don't know. You didn't tell us.
I just did tell you. Pay attention.
Okay.
Right, let's see what
I'm saluting you.
What are we talking about? Doctor something, isn't it? That's funny. That was
worth the wait.
You know, occasionally wind up my wife. When anybody who used to be in Doctor Who comes on, I always say, oh, weren't they in that series, Doctor something? and of course, when I went in the other room and saw Kylie Minogue on there, I said, oh, didn't she used to be in that? I walked through very quickly before something was thrown at me.
How often does she hit you for doing that?
No, actually, I usually get a bit of a glare and some expletives. It's all right, the laptop's in the front room. Right. Okay, right. The most expensive item listed on eBay in relation to Doctor Who this week, without any bids against it, because it's £2,850, is full-size Dalek BBC licensed This Planet Earth Doctor Who prop with light stroke voice. What a mouthful that is.
Yes.
Buy it now, or best offer. Collection only. And it's free collection. Well, it would be if you got to collect it, wouldn't it? Grief. Imagine if they charged for you to collect it. Going down the list, something 800 could... Why can't I speak today? Something that is £800. It's a Doctor Who-style police box cabin. All it is a sort of shed. Looks a bit like a portaloo. With windows all around, and it's painted dark blue, and they're charging £800 for it. Doesn't look anything like a TARDIS. Anyway, the item that has got bids against it and is it's a BBC Children in Need auction item. This, and it's got £700 against it, 33 bids. It's Doctor Who hand cast Matt Smith. So basically, it's Matt Smith's hands set in. I don't know, it's plaster or. It's a framed. What have they done? Let's read the blurb on it, shall we? The Doctor Who.
Didn't they give that to children in need?
Were you not listening to the first part of what I just said?
That's what he just said.
No, okay, I'm sorry. I was
Did
reading.
You drift?
I was reading. I was reading a Facebook thing.
You were reading a Facebook thing. Oh, damn, I wanted to sound annoyed then, but it was funny. Yes, Doctor Who Matt Smith handcast. This is a real must have for any Doctor Who fan. I suppose if it had Ursula's face in it, then it would be something pornographic, really, wouldn't it? But anyway, to mark the occasion of his first visit to the Doctor Who experience, Matt Smith, who plays the 11th Doctor, didn't know that, did we? Had his hands cast in cement. Oh, it's cement, there we go, not plaster. Only 3 casts of Matt Smith's hands were made, and you can own one of them if you pay at least £701 on this auction. So there you go, it's a fairly exclusive item, really. So there should be quite some interesting things on there if they've got the Children in Need auction on there. Let's see what else we've got here. Not a lot. Got a 10th Doctor's coat from Canada, £336.36 plus £28.40 postage, but nobody's bid against that. Actually, I wouldn't mind that. I'm really looking forward to getting my scarf for Christmas now. I've seen Alistair Pearson wearing his, and I'm jealous. Although I don't know if it's going to suit me. I don't really care. I just want it. I want my scarf. Alright, moving down. I'm going to get glared at by the family when I wear that scarf and my fourth Doctor's t-shirt. Actually, now with Colin Baker being on I'm a Celebrity, I do feel inclined to get the sixth Doctor's t-shirt as well, actually.
Sure, go right ahead.
Let me stop you.
It's like crack. Once you do one, you just got to keep doing them all.
Beg your pardon? Like what? Did you say like crack?
Oh, yeah. Once you start.
I don't advocate the use of drugs on this show. Anyway. Where are we? There's nothing going. Nobody wants to buy. It's Christmas.
I'm sitting in front of the stuff computer. That's where I am.
On eBay. Are you? I'm going to give up on this feature in a minute if I don't find anybody bidding against anything. I'm on page 4 here. Oh dear, I wanted to go off and watch I'm a Celebrity. How many more pages shall I give it before I give up on this particular feature? No answer. I don't know. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm looking for that picture of Matt Smith right, that you page 6. Want me to send.
What picture of Matt Smith that you want me to what I want you to send?
The official BBC picture of him in front of the TARDIS.
Put it on the BBC website.
That's why you've been distracted.
Because it had been sent to me on Facebook, so I was going to find it.
I finally found something. At last, here we go. Doctor Who, Matt Smith, action figure, signed by Matt Smith. £100. One bid. And if I can find one more item, I'll be happy, because that'll be the end of the feature, and I've done my job. By the way, listeners, you can send in your feedback to 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. The third item is a rare interactive 18-inch, 20-inch, make your mind up, Dalek Sec radio remote control thing with the original box. Now, I've got the 18-inch Dalek, but it's not Dalek Sec. It's one of the sort of goldy bronzy Daleks, but it's still very good. I remember when we first had it, there's a video on Facebook of me getting it to attack something and it ends up attacking me. So you know, it's really good. It's sort of voice control, so you can say you have a booklet and you have to like give it commands and it responds. Very, very good. £99 that bid will cost you plus £19 for postage. Mine, however, which is obviously not in brand new in box, but it is mine, will cost you shall we say £80? Yeah, £80. There you go. Sold to anybody who wants to pay it. Give me £80 for my 18-inch voice controlled, radio controlled as well, Dalek. That's it. It's nice to be back, isn't it? I have to say, it's lovely. I've really missed doing this podcast. Actually, amazingly, sort of missed you lot as well. I don't know how that transpired.
Aww.
What's wrong with you, Ed?
might have to go and see a psychiatrist.
Yeah. When we're done, you will.
Next week, of course, we'll be talking about Colin Baker. Of course, listeners, please vote to keep Colin Baker and I'm a Celebrity, because he's a nice chap and I think he deserves to win it. It keeps Doctor Who getting mentioned on ITV, which is always a good thing. That's about it, really, isn't it? Anything else anybody wants to bring up that they've heard over the last couple of weeks they want to mention in relation to Doctor Who? Please do so now.
Gone.
And hopefully Robert will be back next week.
I'm here to work.
Are you? Oh, by the way, recording next week. I think it would be probably prudent to record on Monday. One, because Robert's probably not going to be a good idea at this stage to get in up at...
Well, we have less than 24 hours to watch it?
Magic. You're lucky. He's in the other room. Stars in here. No. Next Monday.
I don't know. I was just joining you with Kirby's joke.
Oh, was it a joke? Sorry, I thought it was me too. Yes. Monday week.
I'm here to work.
It'll be quiet. Hopefully Robert will be back and we'll be talking about The Doctor's Daughter.
Ooh.
Why? Mm.
They did actually have some deleted scenes from Doctor's Daughter on this disc, which were quite interesting.
Yeah, I'll watch the deleted scenes once we are done. I've got it all queued up, ready to watch.
There's an extended scene from the bit where when she dies. Oh, spoiler.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that a long time ago.
What, her dying?
Far away?
the extended part of the scene.
Watching the deleted scenes on this disc along, like when I first got the disc.
Hmm. I just got thinking, actually, obviously with Disney taking over the franchise of Star Wars, I wonder if they'll ever take over the Doctor Who franchise and might have a Disney princess. Amy.
Kirby would be in heaven.
I know Isabella would absolutely love Disney princess Amy. Or as she used to say when she was little, Amy.
Turn down to the ground.
Yeah. Anyway, right, thanks everybody, and see you next week. Yes, it will be next week, by hook or by crook. Even if those lot aren't available, I'll be here all on my own.
I'll be available.
Alright, fair enough. And until then, thank you for listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, which is back. Actually, I was going to say this is a new 20 Megabyte podcast because of the little
front
break
and side too.
But when I realised we're still quite high up the charts, it's still the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm here to work.
I'll take a salute.
Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.